Welcome to the History of North America. I'm Mark Vinette. The Iroquois developed an advanced system of agriculture, food gathering, and storage, including various uses of maize and other food plants that greatly contributed to the nourishment of their clans. Let's learn more from the Iroquois History and Legends podcast.
Iroquois History and Legends, how they lived. We are going to be talking about agriculture and how the Native Americans grew their crops, how they gathered and foraged, and all of the surprisingly unique and interesting techniques they had to be very successful at it.
Now, obviously, this is going to be Iroquoian focused because based on different parts of North America, different people farmed different ways, but there's a lot of similarities across the board.
The Three Sisters are basically the cornerstone of the food pyramid in your average Iroquois town. They're broken down into three families. You have the maize family, which we know as corn. They had various types of corn, and then they also had beans and squash.
And again, many varieties of all of those as well.
Why do they call them the Three Sisters? Why not just call them the Three Foods?
It really goes back and plays into the Iroquois creation story. When Sky Woman descends from the sky world into this earth, and after she passes away, her body begins to decompose, and from it springs corn, beans, and squash from her head. The Iroquoian and other northeastern peoples that called them the Three Sisters thought of it as they sustain us and work with us, so they're just like a part of our family.
They were basically born from her body. Another reason to call them the Three Sisters is being corns, beans, and squash. They all work together in a symbiotic relationship and actually promote each other for the mutual benefit of all the crops.
A corn stalk is a large pole that goes up. And what do beans generally need for support? Usually we put stakes in the ground so that the bean stalks can grow up. Well, the corn kind of acted like that. And so you would plant the beans in with the corn. They would grow up and wrap around and have support. Conversely, beans help draw nitrogen out of the air and it puts it down into the root system, and the corn is able to absorb that nitrogen from the bean root system. As for squash, we're talking about all different kinds from the gourd family, which could be pumpkins and cucumbers and regular squash, butternut squash, acorn squash, any kind of squash you can think of. They have very broad leaves. The leaves end up spreading around and they create a barrier for weeds to come up. And also, the leaves help keep moisture in so that the sun isn't evaporating everything off the soil.
So just like a family all works together for the mutual benefit of all, the Three Sisters have this great relationship where one brings nitrogen to the ground, one holds moisture in, while the corn stalk rises above them and gives support for the smaller ones to grow up around them. It really is a great symbolism for how a family works.
Corn is a genetically modified organism. Corn does not occur naturally. It is a product of thousands of years of man-made crossbreeding. Corn belongs to the grass family. And if you look at it, and you look at a blade of grass that's grown and mature, you can kind of see where the similarities are.
If you ever see grass when it grows feral and wild, it actually grows quite tall, sometimes 4 or 5 feet high. And when it does, if you look very closely, you may see a very, very, very small piece of grain growing in that tall grass.
That's not to say that corn is exactly like the grass that we have here in North America, but it's in the same family. What anthropologists have discovered is back thousands of years to South America, there was this type of grass that would grow and it would produce a small ear of grain, really small. Over the years, people cultivate it for one reason or another, and they'd look at it and they figured out if we plant this big stuff with other big stuff, the next year when we plant the seeds, it gets a little bit bigger.
And then that year, they take the biggest from those two and plant them together. And they just keep doing that over thousands of years. Now, when this first started and they started planting these, they were basically just to complement their diet from other things they found. But over time, they ended up being able to grow these corn ears so big that it actually became the cornerstone of their diet. Storable carbohydrates.
If you look at the Nile River Valley, the Egyptians, they had a special kind of grain that they would use in harvest. You look at the Indian Valley or the Yellow River Valley in China, or even in Europe, we used barley and wheat. So this became the cornerstone, because if you don't have storable carbohydrates, that means you don't have food that can be stored year-round. And that kind of leaves you on a whim where you have to constantly be roaming around following herds of wild animals or roaming around with your pack cattle and sheep.
Now that the Native Americans have invented a way to grow corn so that it can sustain whole villages, all of a sudden, their population is able to increase because they no longer have to worry about famine, one bad harvest completely wiping out their village through the winter because they'd all starve to death.
Or relying on having a bad hunt or not catching a lot of fish. And it allows you to stay in one place for a longer amount of time.
And the thing with carbohydrates is when you break them down and dry them, they're basically a pure starch, and they can hypothetically just last not just one season, but they could last several years. If properly stored, carbohydrates could theoretically last for hundreds of years.
It's not an understatement when we say how much corn Native Americans grew. This wasn't a few rows out in the back garden. For a small village, you could have hundreds of acres of fields of corn. When Henry Hudson was sailing up the Hudson River, he wrote in his journal that he saw a bunch of dry corn being stored on the shore, and he said, "There's enough drying here to load 3 ships, plus everything that still hasn't been harvested in the field." A lot of times, especially when we look at Jamestown and these early English settlers, they were accosted with famine, and it was the Powhatan Indians gave them a lot of corn as carbohydrates to help keep them up from starving to death with a high enough calorie count.
Let's talk about how they actually grew it, how they cultivated it. Now, women and men were looked at as equal in Iroquois society, but they had very different roles. The men primarily did a lot of the hunting and the fishing. But the farming was the women's domain.
It's not like they were forced to do it. It was recognized as their task and responsibility. They have no plows. They have no farming equipment. But you need somebody to organize all this. It was an elected position. Clan mothers would elect and appoint men to positions. They needed to appoint a woman that would be the overseer for the whole town, that would be able to organize who goes where and does what and how it's collected and how everything's stored. So it's a very important position in the government. So the women get together, they elect one woman to oversee everything. And then she is also allowed to appoint 2 assistants or lieutenants to help her organize everything. If you wanted to have a personal garden, that was fine. And generally they'd have a little totem pole set up, which would have a marking on it, which showed which family this one belonged to.
When you're thinking about how big their fields were, if there's several hundred acres for their village, these are going to have to be very far away from where they're living. But you don't necessarily want to go a mile away to pick your corn or your squash for the day, so almost every longhouse would have their own smaller garden where they could grow small amounts of fresh crops right outside their house.
They did not have metal, they did not have cows, so you could not plow and till a field. What they would do is they would take hardwood and make it into a handle, like a spade, and then maybe attach deer antlers onto the end of a stick, and they would use it like a hoe to overturn the soil just enough to loosen it up. And then what you would do is you would take the corn seeds and you would plant them in a circle in that hole that you've just dug up. And then as the corn is growing up just a little bit, they would plant the beans after that. Because you don't want the beans growing faster than the corn, because the corn needs to support the beans, and beans grow a little bit faster.
So they had the timing down to science, where they knew exactly what time of year to plant one and then plant the other, so they don't all start competing for the same light or the same nutrients. They can work together and support each other. Now, another interesting technique they had is after they would plant the corn seed and it would grow just a couple inches, they would then come back and push dirt over the stalk, which makes you wonder, why would they do that?
Well, there's 2 reasons. One, it gives them a little bit more ground to support their root system. And secondly, especially if you're planting early in the season, it's going to cover up that little bit of green to prevent it from frost that could come early in the year.
Traditionally, you always want to wait until the last frost is over,
which usually in the New York area could be mid-May or sometimes even late May.
But using this technique, you can start several weeks earlier and get a jump start on your crop, and then you just throw a little dirt around each stalk, and your corn is several weeks ahead of the current methods for farming.
And the way that they did this is start the fields planting in mid-April and harvest by mid-June, and you could rotate around because it's just people. You can't plant everything at once. So if you have a rotating system going, you could start harvesting in mid-June, and then if you've planted seeds every few weeks all the way through, you could be harvesting all the way into October. Once the corn and beans are established, then you plant the squashes last. There would be cucumbers, pumpkins, summer squash, and even watermelons, but those came along post-European contact. And the leaves, once they get going, they just spread everywhere. So you want to make sure that the corn and beans are established before you get those going, because the point of it is to choke out the weeds, and you don't want it choking out the plant you're trying to grow.
Check out the YouTube version of this episode, which has accompanying images. I'm Mark Vinette, and I hope you're enjoying the ride. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.